What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. It is Jacob and Tommy. We're joined by TJ Cleveland here today, a three-man booth for Sports Daily, as we can officially turn the page into the NFL divisional round. We'll do that, especially with the Kansas City Chiefs. Executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, set to join us in the next hour. Looking forward to that conversation, as it's been a long time since we've seen the Chiefs play. Monday Night Football, featuring the last wild card game, is in the books. We can dig in just a little bit to Rams-Vikings. The job Tommy and I have been, you know, sort of pondering and goofing around with, the Dallas Cowboys job, is in fact open. And the circus is already here, and I'm here for that circus. It's a game night for both Wichita State and K-State. So we have a lot to get to today. You can get in touch with the program. You can call us on the KFH hotline, 869-1240. You can leave us your video comments on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. You can leave us your voice messages through the Odyssey app. Just push the little microphone there. All kinds of ways to get in touch with the program. Fellas, how are you?
Man, we're good. Ready to hang out here. I'm a little bit worried about TJ, to be honest with you. It's really early for him. I can see the bags under his eyes. I'm not sure he's going to make it.
When I left the apartment this morning, I felt like I was going to the airport because that's the only time I leave the apartment this early. I'm fortunate to have a fiance that wakes up at 5 a.m. or I'd be a lot more questionable getting here at 7.
Yeah, I don't think you've had to work the graveyard shift in TV yet. Yeah, it's brutal. This is a cakewalk compared to our colleagues over at KWCH that work the morning shift. They're up and at them around midnight. That is a brutal shift. This one's not so bad. You just need to have a few kids, TJ, and then you're boom. You're right there on it. No big deal. He's busy.
The only morning shift I think I've ever worked was after some Super Bowls, and you get a little bit of momentum keeping you awake at that point. So Monday Night Football didn't keep the momentum going for me quite as much.
No, it didn't, because it wasn't very close. And we ended the wild card round with one essentially close game, and that was the Commanders game. So the Rams dominate the Vikings, I think, to the fear, but it's not like we couldn't see that coming. It's what's strange about it, I think, Tom, and you talked about it in your picks. Like, we all waited this year for Sam Darnold to show up, and he showed up in the finale and then in that game. Like, it's some of those things that we've seen forever. Like, dude, you can't hold the ball that long. Just throw it away. Like, it just mistake after mistake, just because he's holding the ball in the pocket. He lost a lot of money last night, and that's too bad for him, because he's had an incredible year, an MVP candidate. I hope he gets the chance to start somewhere next year.
I still think for the Vikings, best case scenario is to franchise tag him. But man, that's a bummer for Vikings fans. Shout out to all the Vikings fans, Brandon Zinner, who are out there right now, who had to suffer through that and could see that coming to some degree. But the other thing, I think the even bigger takeaway, Tommy, is that the Rams are white hot. Nobody's talking about him. That's a team that could absolutely make a run through the NFC.
Yeah, as far as Sam Darnold is concerned, I mean, he didn't get much protection at all. I mean, he was sacked 9 times, but some of that he held onto the ball way too long and made some really poor decisions in keeping the football. So it was kind of a combination of both, and he was rattled, I think, from the finale against Detroit. That continued on against the Rams, front four getting to him and all of that. So credit to LA. I mean, they showed why they absolutely belong in moving on to the divisional round. And, you know, whether you're talking about what Kyren Williams can do in the backfield, Matthew Stafford, I mean, he started the game so hot. He was 10 of 10 to get things started. A lot of that was Tyler Higbee. We'll see what his status is moving forward because he was ruled out with an injury during the course of the game last night. But, you know, they really showed why they belong, and people should be talking about them more. Are they a championship contender type team this season? I'm not sure about that, but I certainly think they can win another game in the playoffs.
I'm not sure who I would say out of the NFC is definitively more a championship contender right now. I honestly, like, their best game, in which we probably saw last night, TJ, is playing that level of defense. But that offense has always been capable of this. They have a great running back, great run game, two, three great pass game weapons, and they have a future Hall of Fame quarterback there. If their defense, which has been young but I guess ascending, can play that way, I mean, I think they're at their best. I think they're better than the Eagles. I guess at their best, I would say I think they're better than anybody but the Lions, who are banged up right now. I think they can make a run. Stafford's their quarterback. And if the path goes through Detroit, ultimately, that's an indoor game. You know, the next one will be interesting for them. But I think the Rams are poised to do something special. And that's not to say I think they will. I just think they're right there with basically all the rest of the NFC teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say whenever, obviously Sam Darnold didn't have a great game, but, I mean, you kind of chalk up some of it to the Rams defense just kind of dominating through that one. I think I've got it pulled up here that the Vikings went 6-for-17 on third down and got sacked 9 times. So that's not just Sam Darnold. There's a lot of other components that are going into that as well. So I agree. I mean, I guess I wasn't familiar enough with the Rams defense to go out and do something like that. But, I mean, if they're going to do that, the offense doesn't even have to be great. They just have to be okay the rest of the way. And, you know, the NFC, I know that everybody's talked about that they wouldn't be surprised if there was a single team that went to the Super Bowl in that one. 1 through 7, they're all really, really good teams. And obviously the Rams have Sean McVay. They have Matthew Stafford. They've got so many huge pieces that people talk about in the NFL. So they've got the DNA to do it. So it's going to be a tough road the next two to get there, but they're going to be a really tough team to beat.
They got blitzed by Philadelphia, Tommy, the last time they played them. But just like looking back at their last handful of games, and the finale didn't mean a lot for them. But you had they've allowed less than 10 points in if you know, basically in their last 4 meaningful football games. And one of those was against the 49ers, right? So it wasn't like they weren't in, and one was against the Cardinals. We just saw one against the Vikings. These are good offenses. They're shutting down. They're interesting. 6-point dogs, Philadelphia, not to spoil our picks. Like, I got the Eagles going to the Super Bowl. I don't think I like that line at all right now. Not the way they played last night. And then the Vikings have the other side of it. And there was always the question of what's happening with J.J. McCarthy. Look, I think that it best case for the Vikings fans, they can get Darnold franchised and ease McCarthy into it. But Darnold may not want that. I do think, Tommy, that he showed us enough that there are openings. There will be openings out there that, like, if you don't get your core, even if you do get your quarterback in the draft, I don't know. I think Darnold deserves a chance, certainly, to start next year. It's just hard to imagine at this moment where that might be.
Well, I think he's going to be an upgrade, for multiple teams that are pretty quarterback needy. I look at a team like if the Jets don't bring back Aaron Rodgers, what could happen there? I mean, I know that Darnold was there before and it didn't work out, but maybe that's a redemption story. That might be, one place you could maybe look at. Or a team like the Raiders, that would be an upgrade at quarterback, from what they had in Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell this year. But I do think for Sam Darnold, I mean, he's obviously going to test the market and see what's out there. But I think ultimately for him, I do think the best scenario would be to get franchised by the Vikings, you showed that you can win games there, and you can be kind of that bridge to J.J. McCarthy. He was already that way, but I think if you can give it a little bit more time, that may be at least a decent way to get your value back up in Minnesota before you hit the market again.
Could you imagine, what can I get my betting ticket at for a return of Rex Ryan and Sam Darnold the same year to the New York Jets?
I'm in. Count me in on that. I mean, that's a dumpster fire, and I'm all here for it.
For the dumpster fire. We can only handle one potential dumpster fire next year, and that's going to be for the Dallas Cowboys. We're going to talk about that opening when we return. We've been joking about it. I don't know how to look up old tweets or whatever it is on X, but I got to go back and look at my crazy conspiracy Cowboys theory from a long time ago and see how much of this is happening. I'll see if I can't dig that up. I have no idea how to do it, but I've got a few minutes to try and figure it out here during the break. We're coming back. It's Three Man Booth. It's Albrock. It's Caster. It's Cleland. Don't go away. Sports Daily. Coming right back.
I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here, and we are glad to be with you. Mornings at KFH, staff enjoys a great cup of coffee from Prairie Fire Coffee. We appreciate their support. All right, I couldn't find all my conspiracy theory delight from, I don't know when that was, probably like October or something. But it basically started this way. And the Cowboys, they do it. But the next stages of this, in order to get primed to Dallas, would be to trade Dak Prescott away in order to draft Shedeur Sanders. Trade that $60 million a year contract away, which, of course, will never happen. So the Shedeur Deion combo in Dallas won't happen. But would Deion coach the Cowboys? Is the Cowboys, you know, they can't just do it in simple terms, but they break up with Mike McCarthy, something they should have done a year ago. They do it now. McCarthy will probably get another head job and probably deserves it, quite frankly. But I don't think he was the right fit in Dallas. So who does Dallas turn to now? You guys buying into, Tommy, the prime to Dallas thing that we all so desperately want to see?
Well, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, this would be the biggest thing in the world. And I know that Adam Schefter reported that Jerry Jones and Deion had talked. Like, you know, they've had a conversation, and I think it's more than likely probably going to happen. I think the thing that Jerry's going to have to be okay with is knowing that he's not going to end up being the top story with the Cowboys if Deion comes in. Now, if things go off the rails, then you're obviously absolutely going to hear a lot more from Jerry during that time. But at least to get going, you're going to have to put Deion up on that pedestal from day one, and Jerry's going to have to kind of be in the background. And if Jerry's okay with that to get going, then I think it's going to happen.
I mean,
I don't think this will happen. I wish it would, but I don't think it will.
I think it definitely could happen. I know that there was a lot of speculation about, you know, he's not going to coach somewhere where his kid isn't, and that was the whole thing in college, and that was what it was going to take to get him to go pro, is that if you drafted Shedeur, you would get Deion along with it. I think that if you pay him enough, I think that Deion cares enough about himself as well that he would put all that aside and he would go be the head coach of America's team, because that would feed right into the Deion Sanders narrative and everything like that. I think that a part that I feel like a lot of people aren't talking about, and I guess it hasn't even come down from the, you know, national media smoke or anything like that, but you know, the Las Vegas Raiders have an opening and they have the fourth overall pick, and there's a lot of smoke that Shedeur could end up there. I think that if the Cowboys want Deion and Deion is going to be an NFL coach, they've got to do it before the draft, or they've got to do it before those talks start happening. Because if Vegas says, we're going to draft your kid if you come here, then I think that that's a lot more appealing to him than it would be to coach the Cowboys without his kid and coach Dak Prescott, in my opinion.
Hey, you know, they also could always trade Dak to the Titans, who have the number one overall pick.
My wish list, yes.
And you could have the Tennessee Titans be, you know, the team that have the service to Dak.
They'll not be doing that.
They're probably
The Titans have nobody of note on that roster. Like, they're going to trot out.
That's why you don't trade
Will
for
Levis
million.
And Mason Rudolph, right. You know, as their quarterback. Right. So I mean,
they're not close enough where Dak puts them over the edge.
Look, but if you're Tennessee, would you rather have Dak as your quarterback, or would you rather draft a rookie? Like, would you rather draft Shedeur? Like, I feel like, at least you know like what Dak can bring you, where you don't really know what Shador can do.
Here's how I would ask that question, or here's how I'd think about that question if I was Tennessee. Will Dak in 4 years take us to a Super Bowl? Because if not, I'm not willing to pay him $60 million a year. And so I would rather, if I'm the Titans, build around, if I believe in one of the young quarterbacks, I would much rather do that than pay $60 million a year for a quarterback who's not going to take me to the Super Bowl. If Dak can't take the Cowboys roster to the Super Bowl, he's not taking the current state of the Titans roster to the Super Bowl. So I wish that would happen. I think that would be fun. Here's what I think is going to happen. I think Prime is leveraging. I think he's going to stay in Colorado. I think the better chance would be the Raiders. I agree, but Tom Brady's in charge of that job. This is his. I think his neck's on the line with this, probably more than people are talking about. It sounds like he was sort of the driver for them to step away from Antonio Pierce and their GM. I highly doubt Brady is comfortable with that sort of a risky move. Could work. I think it could definitely work. I think Prime could be a really good NFL coach, but I highly doubt that Brady's interested in that. I think that Prime is leveraging a new deal in Boulder. I really think he likes it there, and I bet you he's the Colorado coach next year.
Well, and you know, you just mentioned, can Dak lead the Cowboys to a Super Bowl in 4 years, right? And if the answer is no, then why is Deion going to take that job?
Well, I think
why Dak would anybody want to take that
Dak, Dak with the Cowboys is different than Dak with the Titans. They won 12 games back to back years. I do think, look, when you gave Dak that deal, you're all in there. Like, you don't have a choice now if you're Dak. Like, you have to push them all in. And the other thing is, like, I don't want, this isn't like a bash Dak Prescott segment for me. Dak's been a fine NFL quarterback, and I think in the perfect circumstances, you could see a path for him as much as a lot of NFL quarterbacks. They had a ton of injuries this year. They didn't do anything to help themselves in the offseason. That has to change. And I think that, you know, if they can get back to the level of defense that we've seen from them, and they have some really talented defensive players, I do think a coach could step in there and maybe turn it around. Right now, according to bookies.com, which I know nothing about, so take these with a grain of salt, but it's the first thing I could find. Joe Brady, the Bills OC, is the odds-on favorite. Prime is the second odds-on favorite. They've got Prime at 6-1. Kellen Moore, excuse me while I remove the vomit from my mouth a little bit here, as a Cowboys fan, is the third odds-on favorite. Bobby Slowick, who's been really popular. Ben Johnson, of course, who is the most popular. The one I really do think you should watch is Jason Witten. And then it goes on down the list. But I don't know what the Cowboys will do, but if we stack up the odds to win right away for all the jobs right now in the NFL side by side, the Cowboys is the best job. That's the best job out there. And I love the Bears job, but the Bears have that division and the Cowboys don't have that division. The Cowboys have that division where different teams come out of that division every year. I would much rather try to play my way through the NFC East than I would the NFC North. I don't think there's any question about that. I think the NFC North's arrow in totality is way, way better. At least you have the Giants in the East. The North doesn't have anybody to beat up on. And I do think Dak with CeeDee Lamb and an ascending offensive line and Micah Parsons, assuming they get him back and some players back from injury this year, like that's a pretty turnkey job. If your goal is to win right away, you can do worse than Dak Prescott in some of these other jobs that are open out there.
I think that it's you're right. You know, every time that you're going to take a job as a head coach, it's because you're walking into a situation where something went wrong, and this is probably the best one that, you know, we've seen. The Cowboys were a playoff team last year, and they're a really good team. You know, and then they don't get a running back. They kind of just sit free agency out, and then everything just kind of falls is the way it goes. But, you know, early this season, we were talking about how good this team could be and everything like that. So I think that you go out, you know, they're probably going to draft Ashton Jeanty if they can get him. I know they want him really bad. So
better not.
It's going to be a pretty good situation. You know, obviously, if you walk into a situation and you have Micah Parsons on your defense, you have CeeDee Lamb on your offense, it's the best that you can get in the NFL this season. It's the best that I can remember in a recent memory as well.
I mean, did you guys not catch what the best quarterback outside of Roger Staubach for the Cowboys, Troy Aikman, said last night about that job? mean, he said it wasn't a job that people will covet, that it's a high-profile job. We absolutely know that it is. But he said it's not a job that is coveted by people around the league for a variety of reasons. I mean, knowing the way that your 82-year-old owner operates the team, knowing the way that you have locked in $60 million on a franchise quarterback that, yeah, has been able to take you to the playoffs, but there is no faith at all that he can win you a championship. I could see a lot of coaches out there, potential head coaches in the league, being like, yeah, thanks, no thanks. Like, I don't know if I want the circus going on with it. And I understand the whole argument about the division and everything that you said. But remember, the Eagles went to a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. They're one of the best teams in the conference. The Commanders just won a playoff game. They're on the come up with Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn. And Dan Quinn's been in Dallas. He knows how to beat the Cowboys. I know that the Giants are a big-time issue and at the bottom of the league right now. But, man, it's not going to be a cakewalk for any coach. I don't care if you're Dion or Jason Witten or Ben Johnson. It's going to be a tough sled for you because you're saddled with a quarterback that has not shown any kind of propensity.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
To take you to a championship.
But this essential roster in two of the last 4 years has won that division with 12 wins each time. No
and
team
been
ever wins
in the playoffs.
Division. Right, exactly. No, I don't disagree with that. But would you rather have that or the Saints' job? You know, would you rather have that or
I'm not saying the Cowboys' job is all the way down at the bottom of the list. I'm just not sure that it's at the very top either. Like, I think the Bears is a more
I think the Bears is the only one in the conversation because you get Caleb Williams.
I mean, I think that, you know, you could the kind of where I rank the Cowboys' job around the league is, I mean, I would probably put it on par with Jacksonville because you've got an incumbent quarterback in Trevor Lawrence that is probably around the same level as Dak as far as what he can Dak hasn't shown that he can win when it matters the most, and neither can Trevor Lawrence. Like, neither one of those guys have shown that. You know, and at least with Jacksonville, you're away from the circus, and you can kind of do what you want to do in relative obscurity, and the expectations are not going to be through the roof for you from day one.
Well, I mean, it's what kind of challenge are you looking for? Trevor Lawrence is I hate that I sometimes come across as a Dak. I'm not a Dak hater. I'm a Dak fit with McCarthy, and it's not going to work. Trevor Lawrence, I mean, he's never had a season that touches some of Dak's best seasons. I mean, some of Dak's best seasons are incredible. He led the league in touchdown passes a year ago. His completion percentage is high. He doesn't throw a ton of interceptions most of the time. He's just not a gamer, but neither is Trevor Lawrence or really any of these quarterbacks for jobs that are open, or they wouldn't have open jobs. And so I think, yes, I do think Dak can succeed at a high level in a perfect situation. Mike McCarthy was not that. Mike McCarthy got out coached in big games far too often. You have to have a strong running game. Like if you could, and this has been the Cowboys problem for two decades, like Tony Romo never had any defense, right? And then he hands it off to Dak Prescott, who's learning and ascending while they have a really good defense. And then as Dak sort of gets really good and they have all their weapons, their defense isn't good. They can never get it all at the same time. But I think Dak is an above average NFL quarterback. And that's hard to find in the NFL. I mean, it is, especially when you're looking for jobs. So which kind of coach is going to take the job, I think, is what you look at. If I'm one of these young coaches taking their first shot in the NFL, I'm not sure Dallas is my favorite job. But the one thing that you get offered some security in is you have your quarterback. Look at what just happened to Antonio Pierce. Go look at all the coaches that were just fired. What do they all have in common almost universally is they don't have a quarterback. And so you can take this job where at least you have a quarterback. And maybe you don't win the Super Bowl in the first 4 years with Dak, but maybe you have a really good run and you build up enough credit, basically, to then transition. It's a risky job, but I do think it's the highest upside job. And I know the Cowboys and Mike McCarthy just broke up for various reasons, but look at how long they dealt with Jason Garrett going 500, right? Like Jerry Jones will deal with that stuff for a long time. A guy like Ben Johnson's interesting. Does he want the high profile or does he just want a coach? A coach that just wants to coach, Dallas isn't a bad job because Jerry Jones will always take the attention away for you. You don't have to deal with it. I don't know. I think it's a better job, but you do have Jerry Jones there. And I think that's what Troy Aikman's talking about is you have Jerry Jones there and he's undercutting you every other week with what he says, but you can almost ignore it. I wish they would go see if they could get Mike Tomlin pried away from the Steelers. That'd probably be my top choice and Prime, because I think Prime would be so entertaining, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think Prime's staying in Colorado, TJ. I don't think he's leaving.
I mean,
do you like the Cowboys job the best of the jobs open?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think that it's a better job than the Bears job. Obviously, I think the only one that we haven't talked about that has already been filled is the Patriots job would be a really good job as well, because you have Drake May and the number four pick. I mean, you've got space.
What are they going to do with the number four pick that helps them? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. You can do something with it. You got more capital than most of the other jobs that you can get. So I don't know. I think that's a solid fit there for Mike Vrabel as well. I think that, you know, obviously everybody's going to talk about Deion and the circus that comes along with it. But you talked about it, Jacob. The Deion's a good coach.
He surrounds himself with really good coaches. That's what he does.
Yeah, and you look at what he did at Colorado, and everybody wondered, you know, it's just like, how is this team, like why are they so bad when they have two guys that were in Heisman contention? And it was like, because they only had two guys that were in Heisman contention, and that was about, and they had a couple wide receivers and everything like that, but it really wasn't a great team. I think that if you put him in a situation where he doesn't have to recruit, because he openly said he's not going to go on the road and recruit these kids. He's not going to go to their houses because that's not what he's going to do. Obviously, he didn't recruit the best. He got a bunch of transfer guys. I think he had a whopping zero high school commits this past year, I believe. So I think that if you take something out of his hands and you let the front office do it, granted, the Cowboys didn't do anything this offseason. So if the front office does something for his team, it's going to be a good enough team. And I think that he's going to be a great coach to you know, help Dak Prescott. Obviously, he did it with his kid. I think that he can help Dak Prescott and help this offense coming from a defensive back, but I think he's a good offensive mind.
Obviously, the million-dollar question, or really the $60 million question with Dak, is that can Deion come in, and let's just say this roster stays relatively the same, because we know Jerry doesn't really do a whole lot in free agency. Players walk, and then he doesn't really do a whole lot. Or if he does, it doesn't end up working. So let's just say that the roster is what it is. Can Prime come in and win you a Super Bowl?
With the defense healthy and the number 12 pick and his propensity to bring in good coaches around him, he's got as good a shot as any, I think. I don't know if anybody can. But I think he's got as good a shot as any. Look, if there was a culture issue with McCarthy, and it was weird, I don't think anybody's better at that than Prime. Like, nobody walks into an NFL locker room and commands more respect than Deion Sanders. So I think that's a check in his box. I do think with a good draft, they could and health, they've had a ton of injuries. Like, they did just unlucky this year. Maybe. No, they don't need to draft Ashton Jeanty. They need help in the running back room, but don't use your number 12 pick on that. But use it on something better than that.
Like what?
Their offensive line got a little better. I think they have, you know, assuming Cook stays and their pass catchers stay, I think they're okay there. I would use it on a premier defensive player if I can get one, whether it's in the secondary. They honestly don't even really need, with Overshown there, if he's back healthy, and I don't know when he'll be back. Like, they have a decent pass rush with Parsons. They've missed a team that drafted really well over the last 15 years has missed the last couple of years, and it's really hurt them. So they can't do that again. But it's more about, like, who would Prime bring with him, right? What offensive coordinator can he get in there to get the best of Dak Prescott? And Dak got hurt this year. I mean, Dak led the league in touchdown passes 2 years ago. It's not like Dak is struggling. He's not. He got hurt. And, who can help him win a playoff game? Well, can they run the ball and can they play good defense? And then Dak pick you apart with arguably the best receiver in football, at least the guys in the top five or in the conversation. Maybe. I don't think it's going to work. I don't think anybody's going to work. I think they should have blown this thing up 2 years ago. But you have to try now. You paid Dak $60 million. Like, you have to try. So you might as well swing for the fences and go after a guy like Prime.
I think that the biggest thing with this is that you're not hiring a coach. I mean, you're obviously hiring a coach to try to win a Super Bowl, but when you look at what the Cowboys have done, it's not like you're trying to replace Andy Reid like the Chiefs are going to have to do in a couple of years to not lower the standard. They aren't a team that's competed that deep in the playoffs since I remember watching the Cowboys. It's not like you're picking a coach to go be a perennial Super Bowl champ.
Yeah, it's been in your lifetime, unfortunately, for some of us. It's been a minute. 869-1240 is that number to call. We're coming back. We'll look ahead to a couple of these college basketball games tonight. More to gain, more to lose. Shockers, Wildcats, both in a bad spot. We'll talk about it next on Sports Daily.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
You want to win some HTO, a free iced tea and a free coffee drink, including root beer and root beer tea lattes. You can enter a contest to win one of each right now. Just text the keyword tea to the short code 20357. You can get one of each of those at either Wichita location or in Derby. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Again, that's tea to 20357. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Thanks, everybody, for listening to us here on KFH or on the Odyssey app. Thanks for watching us on our video stream, Facebook, YouTube X. It's Jake Valbrock. It's Tommy Caster. It's TJ Cleland. We're getting ready for a college basketball game night that, I got to be honest, it's not as exciting as we maybe thought it was going to be to have something like that on a Tuesday night, because we've got two programs in free fall right now in Wichita State and K-State. We spent a little time with each yesterday, both playing at home tonight. Wichita State's a 10-point favorite against Charlotte. K-State is a 6.5 home dog against Texas Tech. Fellas, these have been, a nightmare season, I think, for K-State, and then a nightmare stretch, at least to open AAC play for Wichita State. I think the Shockers are harder to figure because K-State, we've seen this sort of coming for a while. Wichita State's is kind of out of nowhere the last few weeks as to where they were early in the season. I think that bigger picture, and I'll get y'all's take on this, Tommy, bigger picture for me, the greater concern is with Wichita State. K-State, if this season continues to fall apart, they are the correct NIL class away from turning it around in 1 year, right? Like, that's, I don't think that's completely unreasonable or out of the question. They just ponied up that way. This season, it's not working. Wichita State, to me, creates a much greater danger because, A, they're not going to be putting together that kind of NIL class. I think that pipe dream dies with every unsuccessful year, and I think it will be harder to get back for them what they are losing over these past couple of years with these really bad conference seasons.
I think the one thing that you are leaving out, though, about Kansas State, and I'm not suggesting you're minimizing the concern there, but what you haven't mentioned is that I think even though they probably are one NIL class away from turning it around, it does call into question the abilities of Jerome Tang to be the one to shepherd that, to bring in.
They can make that change.
You're right, but then you're going through a head coaching search, you're doing all of that, and I don't think that, Gene Taylor especially is quite at the point to, entertain pulling the plug on Jerome Tang in Manhattan. At least I don't think so. I haven't heard the indication that he is, but I think it does does call into question, though. They might be one NIL class away from getting it right, but can Jerome Tang be the person to go ahead and get the next NIL class for that to be successful for Kansas State?
No, I think that those questions are being asked about both of these programs.
Sure.
By just about everybody. I can tell you, TJ, I was up in Manhattan for the game this weekend, and it's that's what people ask me, and I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. They're asking that same question about Wichita State because that's what we do when there are struggles. Wichita State is not poised for anything like that, and quite frankly, in fairness, it's too early there for something like that, I think. It's really, when it comes to K-State, it's how much goodwill did you bring up with an Elite Eight run? And I'm telling you guys, like K-State, like I don't even know. They still don't have, unless you consider Cincinnati, who again is 0-4 in Big 12 play, they still don't have a good win this season. Like not any of them. Wichita State has several. I think Wichita State's chances to turn this around and be okay the rest of the way are far, far higher than K-State's.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, you talked about that. That's only the, what people want to talk about. And it's true that, you know, if you talk to anybody on the street about Shocker basketball or K-State basketball, if a team is struggling, they're going to ask, you know, what's the buyout? You know, what's it going to take for this to happen?
That's what we do with any college.
And it's true. And I'll say, you know, I know you said at the beginning of the segment here that, you know, it's not as exciting as we wanted it to be. I think for me, maybe it's a college basketball sicko. I think that the more that these teams go into free fall, the more entertaining it gets because you get to see what the thought process is behind the athletic directors, behind the fan support, behind these coaches. What are you going to change? What are you going to do differently? And I think that tonight's a huge night for Wichita State. You get a team at home. You're 10-point favorites. You've basically been 10-point favorites the past two or three games, I believe. I think you're underdogs at Temple. But they... It's so interesting, and it's just, I don't know, because you said, Jacob, I agree with the sentiment that you said that it's kind of a bigger deal that Wichita State's going to free fall right now because this is a team that has like 8 or 9 seniors on it. You're not going to have this team back next year. It's not like you're building towards anything with this group. If this doesn't work, Paul Mills is going to have to start over one way or another, and the only thing that you can get from this group
start over without the NIL resources of a program like K-State. And that's what makes that right. I mean, there is also the, you know, there's also the argument to be made that starting over, okay, like that's not that big a deal because they're not winning like they're supposed to. So we just talk about the and people that listen to the show know, like I'm a Cowboys fan, you know, what for whatever that's worth, like less, like it doesn't, I lose or gain no joy anymore really with the Cowboys, but I'm a Cowboys fan. I can talk about those coaching searches and have fun with it and wish and, you know, have desire for changes and all that stuff. And it doesn't really impact things that happen with Wichita State and K-State impact us personally. And that does, like, we can all pretend like we're statues and we don't have, like, emotion involved in this job and we can just, oh, yeah, we'll just, you know, whatever. That's not the way it is. Like, you develop relationships, you like or dislike people on a personal level. This stuff sucks locally. Like, it's not fun locally to have to even entertain some of these conversations. And honestly, for Wichita State, we've been doing that since Shaq Morris came forward in a report. It's been uncomfortable consistently and constantly at Wichita State. Who should get the job in Greg Marshall's wake? Is it enough? Is he winning enough? Is that been enough? Now you make a change administratively. Now you make a change at coach. Is that coach doing a good enough job? Meanwhile, the fans just keep showing up less and less. Like, that sucks. I hate it. It's not fun. It's far less fun. Like, you can't even, it's hard not to get caught up in just how sad it makes you. Like, it makes me sad. I was sick to my stomach Saturday looking down and seeing what was happening against UTSA. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, this sucks. It sucks. Rick says that I always say Wichita State's in a good NIL spot because they don't have football. No, Rick, you're misquoting me. I say Wichita State should be in a good NIL spot because they don't have football. I don't think that should be is happening because they haven't been splashy in the NIL world yet. I don't, you know, here's what happens when we talk about NIL with Wichita State, Tommy. Compared to our peers, we're in a great place. But the reality is none of us think the peers are UTSA and Charlotte, right? Like, the peers are Memphis, if anybody in the league. And then a level higher. That's what we all think of Wichita State. I don't think the NIL has reflected that yet, but that's where they should be.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that even back in the heyday of Shocker basketball, Final Four run, undefeated season, all of that, you were comparing, and when I say you, collectively, we were all comparing Wichita State to programs like Villanova and Xavier and Gonzaga and, you know, programs should like be. That. You know, back in the Valley days, everybody had Wichita State on par with Creighton. You know, like that was kind of the benchmark for this program. Anybody think that the Shockers are anywhere near the quality of program of those? And I know Villanova has fallen off with Jay Wright, but still, like, I mean, I think from a you know, realistic perspective, it's nowhere near that right now. And it's nowhere near that from an NIL perspective, obviously. It's nowhere near that from a quality of play on the court perspective, from a recruiting perspective, from a support in the community perspective. Like, it's not there right now. And can it get back? Sure it can. But it really gets harder and harder with each game in a season that you had expectations higher and you're losing to clearly inferior opponents.
I think that the worst part about building on what Tommy said here, sorry, is what I said, it's a fully senior group, and the part that sucks the most about this for the Shockers and for Shocker fans is that if NIL was a thing 10 years ago, we wouldn't have this conversation today. If you could go back in the time machine and start paying players back whenever they were in the Final Four and they were undefeated, because you know that the support that they had, it would be tenfold of NIL support for this program. And, you know, being a person that watches Shocker basketball, I don't want to donate my money towards a product that's not going to give me any return on investment, even if the investment is happiness. I'm not going to pay for a team to go lose games. And that's what sucks the most, is that this is a group that's full of seniors, and that's the only thing that they can really give you. Nobody expected this team to go make an Elite Eight run or anything like that, but if you can build a little bit of excitement with a group that's full of seniors, you can start filling the arena back up. Then that starts coming in, and then it helps you recruit more kids, and it's not going to happen. And frankly, they're going to have to go do this with a bunch of, you know, college freshmen and, you know, maybe junior college players next year, because you're going to have a completely new roster, and you're not going to have the excitement to go build a great one.
I think it's a good point. This was the bridge year, right? This was the year where they get back to the top, near the top of the American, and build that momentum. And that's still on the table, by the way. You know, that's the American is not daunting. There are two teams that we can definitively say are better in Memphis and North Texas, and that's it. Otherwise, Wichita State ought to be able to win every other game they play, no matter where they play it. Now, that's where they should be. They're obviously not there. I think we've seen that, or at least glimpses of that, at points this season. Let them get Ronnie DeGray back, see if he can cure whatever this defensive liability issue that's been there. Maybe. Like, their maybe is much higher than K-State's. But for Wichita State, it's not, to Rick's point, that they should be in a good... Look, they paid Greg Marshall top five money. Okay, that's what is out there. That's what they're capable of. I got here in 2014. And since then, Klee Anthony Early, Fred VanVleet, Ron Baker, Landry Shamet, Austin Reeves, if you count him, Jamie Echenique, Craig Porter, Dexter Dennis, Ricky Council, all in the NBA. We see any of that kind of talent out there right now? And so you've got to, this isn't just some team in the American. This is a team that consistently puts players in the league. It's a program that has made a head coach a top five paid head coach in the country. That's why they should be in a good NIL spot. But unless they start winning a bunch of games, this is not the same donor base as K-State. You don't have hundreds of thousands of alumni who can bridge. That's not how this works for Wichita State. You've got a smaller group of really big-time boosters, and if you can get them excited, it's all you need, because you don't have football. They just can't get them excited because they can't win any dadgum games. And that, you know, hopefully it starts tonight.
And you know what?
In Charlotte.
You know what? Like, if there can be any kind of spark of excitement, any glimpse of like, okay, the page is starting to turn. And I think going back to like beating K-State by 20 at home, that should have been a spark. That should have been something that could have turned the page, and you use that to propel you into conference play, all of that. They follow it up with, you know, almost, or they struggled against friends at times, you know, in that game. They followed it up with losing to some of the worst teams in college basketball in conference play. I mean, that spark has totally been extinguished.
And it wasn't just K-State. They had other good wins against good programs. Like, that's
75
the crazy
in the country.
Thing. I don't know where this came from. We're coming back. Hour number two. Stick with us. Three-man booth here for Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome back in, everybody, for another hour of Sports Daily. Want to say thanks to Crestview Country Club for their support of the program. Give Crestview a call. This is the time to talk to them about memberships. Maybe you can negotiate some things in there. But there are social memberships that don't even have golf included in them, and those are still active and alive. Great restaurant, great bar, golf simulators, great tennis facilities, soon to be great pool, all kinds of stuff you might be interested in. Give them a call. Tommy and I are both out there. We both love it. We'd see you out there. Give them a call. Ask them about all the different things they have. And tell them we sent you. We appreciate their support. All right, we come back into hour number two, fellas. We have Dan Israel coming up in about 15 minutes from now to chat about Chiefs-Texans, chat about that rust, that delay. Can't wait to get to that conversation. But let's look elsewhere, though, real quick, at the other three games. Commanders-Lions, you've got a 9.5-point line there. Rams-Eagles, you got a 6-point line there. And Ravens Bills, the Bills are actually home underdogs in that game.
I think we lost Jacob there, TJ. we'll try to get him back. Yeah. So taking a look at those lines, are you surprised about the fact that the Ravens are favorites on the road against the Bills?
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. I know that it will be. I don't know who I even like in this game. Obviously, I think that we've seen the Ravens, the kryptonite a little bit. They've lost some kind of stupid games, for lack of a better term. And I think that the Bills may be a bit more of a disciplined team, so I'm kind of surprised that they aren't getting the favor that way. But I don't know who I am to bet against Lamar Jackson in the playoffs, to bet against Derrick Henry in the playoffs, because they're playing as well as probably any team in the entire league right now. So I think I saw yesterday that whenever the ESPN game matchup predictor or whatever came out, it was an even 50-50 split, which is awesome. I think this is going to be the game of the playoffs, and it's going to be something dramatic like we always see. I think this is the one that we'll see it in.
This is the round. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. This is the round we always love the most. It's always usually the round that delivers the greatest deal. I don't remember, and I'd have to go back historically and look at what the lines are. And I don't remember one where we've seen basically three of the lines be a touchdown or more. I think that is pretty interesting when you look at it in totality. But I do think this round will deliver. I don't think there is any road team that can't win. I think the Texans are the least likely to do it. Vegas thinks the Commanders are the least likely to do it. But, man, Ravens, Bills. So here's what I want to ask you guys, because I've had this discussion when I go on the Infinity Sports Network and do some other things, and people are fired up about it. So Josh Allen's probably going to win the MVP this year, and Lamar Jackson has had a far better season, quite frankly. Now, there are a lot of reasons for that, right? Allen is getting the credit for losing a lot of his weapons and having the season that he's having. He's been pulled from a lot of games because their defense has been much better. I think most of that is nonsense. I think the MVP conversation, Tommy, like our criteria for it changes every single year. And here's my take on it. I think Josh Allen will win it because he didn't get it last year, and the league or the voters or the writers think he deserves one. But his season this year isn't even as good as his season last year, and Lamar's is maybe one of the best, if not the best, we've ever seen. But Allen's going to win it basically because he didn't win it last year.
But don't you think that the winner of the game this weekend, the quarterback, will
win
the MVP?
They waited.
Like, that's kind
of,
they
don't, but it's already done. I think we don't see playoff games.
I thought that there was still voting that could still take place and all of that. It'll be interesting if Allen gets that and the Bills lose the game to Lamar, right? Like that will, because I think that you can make really strong arguments for either one of those guys. But if whichever one is sitting at home after the divisional round, I mean, that's going to dull that argument that one quarterback should be the MVP.
Yeah, it's the voting is done.
Okay,
which is nonsense that we vote for these things before the season is played out. Because yes, that would make it simple. If one of these two flames out in the playoffs, the other should just be the MVP. There were a lot of MVP candidates this year, by the way. Saquon needed to be an MVP candidate. Jared Goff probably did. Sam Darnold to a lesser degree. Joe Burrow had an unbelievable statistical season. Guys, Ja'Marr Chase had a triple crown. and was threatening like top five all-time numbers in yards and touchdowns. Didn't get there, but got real close. Like, there were a lot of MVP candidates this year, and it just, Josh Allen just sort of got written into it. And I'm like, why this year did Josh Allen get written into that? And it surprised me. But I'm telling you, it's because he didn't win it last year, and the league feels like he probably should have. And so he's going to win it this year when he deserves it probably less than he did a year ago.
Yeah, it's such a stupid way of looking at it, but it's completely right. I mean, that's what they're going to do. You know, they talk about the voter fatigue and everything like that for the MVP voters. And it sucks because, you know, you said Lamar had his best season of his career. And you're, you know, obviously you think Josh Allen deserves one. Well, Lamar Jackson deserves three of them. You know, it doesn't matter that he's won one before. You know, it sucks because we're going to look back in 50 years and be comparing quarterbacks, and well, Lamar only won this many MVPs, and it's like, well, he should have had this one, and they gave it to Josh Allen because they felt bad because he deserved one, and Lamar is better in every statistical category. It's the same argument that we saw in the NBA 5 years ago, whenever that was now, whenever Steph Curry won another one of these, and LeBron said, he's like, well, if you think about the most valuable player, you know, look at my team and what I have. It's like, well, if you're going to call it that, then it's just the LeBron award, because LeBron always was on crappy teams. It's the best player is who the MVP is. There needs to be a definition somewhere that this is player in the NFL.
You should at least wait until the most important games are played. If it's really the most valuable player, Tommy, then Mahomes should just get it every year.
It's the same
like
argument.
If you want to talk about adversity within a season and what Mahomes has done to have only one loss, and I know some of them were lucky, but when your line is as bad as it is, when you don't have any of your top three receivers for a large majority of the season, and you're sitting here, you know, watching the wild card round, like, there are the problem with the NFL MVP award is it's never defined the same way within a season.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers won a couple of them. The second one he won most recently, like, Tom Brady absolutely should have won that award that year. He was better statistically. They had a better season. Like, it wasn't even a thing. Lamar Jackson's got two. I don't think there are people afraid to put Lamar in that category, which I believe only include Peyton, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers as three-time or more winners of that award. Brett Favre had three, I think. I don't think it's that. I think it's honestly because there are people that are like, well, we give it to Lamar, and then he struggles in the postseason, so we don't want to give it to him again because that might happen again. Give it after the season. Like, that's the easy solution. Give the award after the season. The most meaningful games get played now, not before voting's ever done.
I mean, it's been an argument in every sport that gives out an MVP almost every single year about what does that mean? What does MVP mean? When you could really just simplify it as the best player. Who is the best player this year?
Or in the NFL, the best quarterback.
Best quarterback.
How would you ever compare? How would you ever legitimately? Pick if Saquon set the all-time rushing record, right? Okay, let's say he does that. You can't tell me he's more valuable to his team than any of these quarterbacks, because he's not. Like, his replacement value is much easier to attain than the quarterback. So you have to gum it up a little bit. I'm not saying Saquon shouldn't have won or anything like that. I'm saying, like, it's, you can't define it anyway. So at least just wait. If Saquon went ham in the postseason and led the Eagles to a Super Bowl, then he probably should have been the MVP, right? But he's not going to get that chance.
You mentioned the Bengals. I mean, both Burrow and Chase, you know, were quote-unquote MVP candidates, most valuable player candidates. Their team missed the playoffs with both of them on the field.
And that has
right?
to be held against them in For the sure. final voting, so, and it could be.
But, you know, but that doesn't mean that they're not among the best players in right. the NFL, because they clearly are. But as far as a value is concerned, they missed the playoffs. They lost a bunch of games early on in the season with both of them. Like, that's a component of it for sure. It becomes this arbitrary argument year in and year out about how we value it, what that means, how it all works. And you're never going to have complete consensus on all of that.
No, and that's the part of the fun too, TJ. I mean, that's by design. Like, it gets us talking. I did 5 hours the other day and couldn't get to another topic because it was just the lowest hanging fruit of all time. We love it. Like, we love to talk about it, and that's a part of it. I get it.
Yeah. The thing that I hate the most that the NFL does is they name an MVP. So the MVP is probably going to be Josh Allen, but the offensive player of the year, that's going to be Saquon Barkley. Even though Josh Allen plays on offense, they're going to give that one to Saquon because he deserves an award. So let's give him that one. Such a stupid way that everything's handled. And you said you can't really compare a running back and a quarterback, but I think that the only way that you can compare this is, and what they do in other sports as well, is just how does that stack up against historic MVPs? How does Saquon's season stack up to another running back MVP season, whenever the last one even was? I can't even remember. You just have to look. Is that season better than that season? Was it worse than that season? Was Lamar's MVP season better than his MVP season last season? It was. I think Lamar should win it. Not to just rant on my soapbox here, but that's the way it should be
handled. Lamar should win it. Lamar just had one of the best seasons we've ever seen, if not the best season we've ever seen from a quarterback. I mean, like, it's absolutely absurd what he did in the regular season, and it is a regular season award. Can he do it against the Bills? We'll have much more on that game throughout the week. Boy, you want to talk about two quarterbacks who are all-timers, right? Like, you put them in any generation, they're going to be right there with any quarterback they're playing with that have, like, everything to lose in that game or game, depending on what kind of run they can make. Man. What an awesome game that's going to be. We're going to talk about the Chiefs game with Dan Israel when we return. That's a good one, too. Don't go away. Sports Daily coming right back.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, on the program with us. Dan, thanks for shifting up to the earlier time slot with us here on Sports Daily.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations.
Thank you. We're glad to be coming at people a little earlier here and still giving people in the old time slot exactly what they've always expected. The Chiefs, look. Right out of the gates, the question on everybody's mind is, when you don't play for as long as they've played meaningful snaps, how much rust do you worry about? We saw in the college football playoff this be a concern, but this is obviously a much more experienced team that's been there before. How is the rust factoring in for you, Dan?
Every player that you talk to, Jacob, would insist the rest is more important. Collectively, that produces rust. And I think that's the debate. I think even in the last time in 2019, when they played the Texans in the wild card round, they came out and they spent a quarter trying to figure out how to get going, right? Yeah. Now, eventually they did, and they ended up thumping the Texans. But I think it's an issue. I think the one thing they have going for them now versus 2019 is the experience. They may be the most experienced team in the playoffs, NFC and AFC. So with that, I think comes the knowledge that the game's going to be fast, it's going to start fast, it's going to stay fast, and it's going to be physical. And if you don't come out and play that way, you'll find yourself in a hole you can't dig out of.
Dan, I know that we talked about, a lot of people talked about who the Chiefs could see in this divisional round. It could have ended up being
divisional opponents. I think I'm unmuted.
There we go. We got it.
Could end up being divisional opponents.
Oh, he just
played
him. So.
Hang on, TJ. All right, TJ. Hang on just a second, buddy. Unmute yourself, TJ. Sorry, there we go. Yeah, we got you.
Okay, something's going on here on my end.
In this divisional round, they could end up seeing an AFC West opponent. A lot of people probably prefer the Texans, seeing that just happened
against them, and they won that game. But after seeing what the Texans did this last week, it feels like a completely different team than we saw at Arrowhead on December 21st.
That second half team against the Chargers was formidable. I'll tell you, I think they're more healthy than when they played a few weeks ago in Arrowhead. And they were tough then. Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, man, that's all you have to say. Who's going to play our offensive line? Because they're going up against two good ones in those defensive ends. And so that really is going to be one of the key aspects, I think, of this game. I'm not sure we've seen enough out of Humphreys to really say he's ready. And so I think we go with the proven Tooney slide or whatever we want to call this and take that route, at least in game one of the playoffs. And then maybe depending on where you are in the second half, if you've got a big lead, maybe we try to get some guys in there with experience, but I'm just not sure I've seen enough out of him to go up against Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter.
Well, I mean, because you don't want to use both, do you, Dan? Like, you don't want to mix them. You kind of want to just make your call and commit to it to some degree because you got to practice that way, especially when you haven't played the meaningful snaps in a while.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that would be a creative way of, you know, putting guys in and out, and you're always changing personnel, but that's hard on the offense as well. You know, Mahomes needs to be able to count on what he's getting there, and I think the only way to do that is to play these guys, you know, snap after snap. Now, again, if the third quarter or the fourth quarter gets here and you've got a sizable lead, you want to do some experimenting, that might be a good time to pull Mahomes out as well. That would be a wonderful thing, but you don't see that very often in playoff games.
Everybody talks about the left tackle battle and everything. I don't even know where we stand on the Isaiah Pacheco injury, missing the final week there. But even when he was healthy, it seemed like the Chiefs were putting Kareem Hunt out there more now that they've had this large amount of rest. Who do you expect to see the majority of snaps at running back?
Yeah, TJ, I kind of feel the same way. I feel like, you know, Hunt was really running strong and he was kind of earning that role. And I think if you had a season of wear with no rest on Hunt, they might be more hesitant to put the load on his back. They might want to go with the fresher back, but he's had a couple of weeks off. These guys are going to have 23 days off between, you know, the debacle in Denver and now, or I guess going back to the game before that. So I feel like they're going to rely on Kareem, but you know, coaches creative with that. And I do think that's a situation where, you know, if one guy doesn't develop a hot hand really quickly, you see some substitution, right? And see if the other guy can.
I think they both have their role. You know, Hunt's been good, but he doesn't have the explosive ability of Isaiah Pacheco. But that'll be a fascinating one. Here's one I've got for you, Dan. I think the player to watch, I think the player that is the most likely to go off to some degree in the postseason is Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. They finally have their wide receivers out there collectively. Travis Kelce's, at least in my brain, never had in the last 4 or 5 years a better opportunity to get one-on-one than he'll have right now, because if they double him, what are you going to do with Worthy and Hollywood Brown and DeAndre Hopkins? Like, you can't do it. And if you can't do it, and they're now doing this quick strike offense, it feels to me like Kelce could be looking at 9-10 catches a game here because he's going to get that one-on-one coverage, and we know what he does to that historically.
And I feel like he's been kind of, I don't want to say he's been saving it all season, because that's probably not, that's not fair, but it feels like it, doesn't it? It feels like a balloon that's been blown up game after game after game, and now we're just going to let it go, and it's going to go nuts. And he lives for the playoffs, man. You know, he and Mahomes are just, they understand this so well. And I feel like, you know, he was content with the 900 yards or whatever he finished, 843 yards that he finished the season with, because he knows that the goal is to three-peat. And all that matters is how he plays in the postseason. So I kind of feel like he's going to be pumped and primed and ready to just come out and destroy teams. And as you said, he's got the supporting cast to do it now.
Dan, you alluded to it, obviously, like a month of rest for this team. It's going to be the most healthy that we've seen in the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't think we've seen this collective group on the field at one time because as soon as one guy went down,
how big of a deal is that to have this unit out there? It feels like you have to be optimistic about it.
I think it's been the story all year. I think it's been this buried headline. If you ask me, and I know everybody wants Kevin O'Connell to get coach of the year, but after the collapse of the last couple of weeks, I'm not sure that's warranted. Andy Reid has been fighting this thing since week one, really since training camp. And it feels like he's just overcome. Now, I get it. They expect Andy Reid to do that. And so it doesn't look flashy when he does. But I really feel like the headline all season has been, how did the Chiefs go 15-2 with all those injuries? And now they get these guys back, or a lot of these guys back. I mean, I wouldn't know what to do if we got Rice back at this point. It's almost an embarrassment of riches. But it'll be really good to see Hollywood Brown out there, a guy that can go toe-to-toe with Xavier Worthy and really threatening the top of the defense. And then you've got guys all over the place, do across the middle, all the way from Travis Kelce to DeAndre Hopkins to Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, I feel like they are poised. If Mahomes has one of those playoff accuracy games that he's so famous for, man, look out. I don't know how the Texans will fight back through that.
Well, because they now have the ability to neutralize the pass rush. With those particular receivers, they can get it out quickly. Jalen Watson, are we expecting Jalen Watson to play? Speaking of guys getting healthy, is that a real possibility?
I have not heard. I know he was on the path, but they were being very cautious with him. So I don't know. I'll find out for you.
You know, everybody talks about path whenever you get into these playoffs.
It's certainly something. Like, their defense was much better with him than they were without him, I think.
Yeah, despite his youth. He was a factor in that. And I felt like when he went out early in the season, it was a marked difference. And, you know, look, the defense, is it as good as it was last year? Probably not, but it's good. And the offense is better. So, you know, I mean, can these guys go out and compete? I do think so. I think you're going to have a healthy Chris Jones going up against, you know, a kind of a beat up offensive line for the Texans. And so I think that all bodes well for getting pressure on CJ Stroud. And Stroud's one of those quarterbacks, man. I mean, we watched it with Jalen Daniels, man. Was that something, watching that kid? He reminds me so much of Mahomes. He's just got a will to win. And I think CJ Stroud is kind of built from that same fabric. And so the last thing you want to do is let him kind of catch fire and feel like, give him some confidence that he's doing the right things here. You want to put him under pressure from the moment the first whistle's blown. And so I feel like if the offensive line can get that pressure on, it minimizes what we have to do with the secondary. I mean, right, that's the way it works. And the one thing you can't do is give a guy 6, 8, 10 seconds to throw. No secondary is going to survive that. So I really feel like the pressure, no pun intended, is on the offensive or the defensive line to really get to CJ Stroud, or at least move him off the mark.
Dan, I apologize.
My mic's on the fritz over here. Everybody talks about the path through the playoffs and everything like that. We saw the Chiefs go on the road and do it this year. But looking at the rest of the AFC, how nice is it to have this go through Arrowhead and potentially AFC championship this game as well?
Yeah, it's completely different feel. You know, I mean, the fact that the Bills and the Ravens, one of those isn't going to survive the other, is just, that's a glorious thing. Because last year we were looking at that going, wow, this is a heavy lift. You know, I mean, if you want to get to the Super Bowl this year, you are going to have to earn it. And they did. And kudos to them, because they didn't play well all regular season, but they played well when it counted. And they're going to need to do the same thing, because I don't think the Texans are going to be an easy team. And certainly whoever makes it out of the 3-4 seed, or the 2-3, whatever that is, seed with the Ravens and the Bills, neither one of those teams is going to be easy, right? I mean, I feel like both those teams are really good and playing well right now. I kind of feel like the Ravens will defeat the Bills. That's just my gut feel. I'm not sure who I want to come to Arrowhead. I'm just glad they're coming to Arrowhead. Like, as you said, I'm just glad they're coming here.
Yeah, it's probably going to be just brutally cold if the Chiefs get by the Texans, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. What would be the thing, Dan, that could doom the Chiefs on Sunday? Is it rust, or is it something, you know, schematically or strategically that could be a potential downfall for the Chiefs in the divisional round?
I don't think it would be strategic or schematic. I think it would be just execution. You know, the rust of execution, a fumble here, a turnover there. I mean, in the playoffs, I know the giveaway turnaway ratio is taking kind of a beating this year, and a little bit last year, where that used to tell you everything you needed to know about a game. And that's not necessarily true anymore. But I do think as you get into playoff football, defenses are better, and one possession or two possessions is a big deal or can be a big deal. And so, yeah, I think it's just more the rust on execution. Can they come out? Can Mahomes connect with his receivers? A lot of mouths to feed, but is he got that kind of pinpoint accuracy that he was so famous for when he was young? And I feel like if they can come out and play, execute in a solid fashion, I think the game plan will be good.
Dan, we appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Good luck on the call. We'll have it here on the Chiefs Radio Network. Anything special you guys have coming up in an early Saturday broadcast?
It was funny. We were in pre-production a little bit earlier this week, and we were talking, and I said, so what do you want to do guest-wise? Do you want to get a guest in there? And the room was kind of silent, and Danan looked at Kling, and Kling looked at Danan, and like, we got a lot to talk about. I was like, okay, guys.
We don't need to.
It's the playoffs.
It's been a while.
I'll give you that.
It's been since Christmas that you've been able to talk about.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Good luck on the call, Dan. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Go Chiefs.
There goes Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. Always good stuff there with Dan. I'm having a hard time. And Tommy, I really like the Chiefs in this game. I think that it's tricky because they're coming in. And I don't think we've seen this yet this year. Like, we have not seen them fully healthy like this at all this year. So what can that open up offensively? I think we'll be closer to what we thought this offense could be when we started this year, even though I know they still don't have Rashee Rice. But this is closer than it's been all year to what we thought we were going to get out of the offense. You've got Isaiah Pacheco there. And now you have, because if you swap what we thought we were getting out of Rice and insert DeAndre Hopkins, I think you can do that somewhat fairly. Like, now this is Patrick Mahomes with the most he can cook with.
Yeah, I think it's just going to come down to how they execute that. I mean, on paper, they've got the most complete offense that we've seen all season long, ready to roll for the playoffs, minus Rashee Rice. I mean, everybody from Xavier Worthy, you know, stepping up and taking that step forward, to Hollywood Brown healthy and back in the lineup, Hopkins, Pacheco, Hunt, Kelsey. They've got their guys. They've got their playmakers. It's just going to be a matter of how they utilize them and how they execute it.
Yeah, TJ, and then there's the other side of the ball. And I think that's where the Chargers doom themselves because they turn the ball over. You know, the Chiefs haven't been doing that for a while. And so the defense, we always want to look at the Chiefs defense, but, you know, it's also starting to pick it up finally, sort of back to where we saw it at the beginning of the year. Chris Jones might be healthy. I'm having a hard time. I mean, I love the Chiefs in this game. I'm having a hard time finding something for Houston to hang its hat on here.
Yeah, you know, you just think about what the Chiefs have had, and this is the game against the Texans that I think that we were anticipating back on December 21st, and that game was really, I think it was wire to wire, the Chiefs won that game, I believe, and a lot of people talked about the Texans and what they were going to be in this AFC, and I think that after that one, everybody's like, well, I mean, it's the Texans. They kind of just got embarrassed on Christmas. You know, they kind of just lost to the Chiefs in Arrowhead, and they're kind of limped into the playoffs. But I think that what they did last week, Nico Collins went for a 122, and Joe Mixon went for 100 yards, and what the pass rush has, and, Mahomes probably going to have to stay in the pocket a little bit against that pass rush or whatever he's going to have to do, because they have a really great one. You just heard Dan talk about it. So I think the Texans have a lot more to hang their hat on than what you're giving them credit for, in my opinion. But I do think that the Chiefs can win this game, but it's going to be a tough road to get there. I can't believe that the spread is as big as it is, honestly.
Well, I mean, it's as big as the margin was last time they played, Tommy, but like the Texans would hang their hat on their pass rush. There's no question about that, but the Chiefs haven't been giving teams the opportunity lately to get there because the ball is gone quickly. Like they're done with the downfield shots. Like those are done. Everything is quick now.
Well, we'd been wondering for so long how the Chiefs could mitigate the disaster on the offensive line, at least at left tackle, all season long. And it really hasn't been left tackle play getting any better. I know Joe Tooney is doing everything he possibly can do to try to improve it. He can only do so much. It hasn't really been improved play at left tackle. It's been how they run their offense to sort of get away from that and minimize, you know, Patrick Mahomes holding onto the ball and trying to take deep shots and things like that. Whether or not, you know, we're talking about them leaning on the run game with Pacheco and Hunt, or getting the ball out quickly with, you know, quick strikes to guys like Hopkins and Worthy, that's really going to have to be the way that the Chiefs continue to operate. I think they can have a lot of success with that. They've just got to really commit to that.
We'll have much, much more on this game this week. It's finally that time of the year. Cannot wait for it. Your comments on the Chiefs game open now. We're back opened up on the KFH hotline, on our video streams. We're coming right back with more Sports Daily right after this.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is a Tuesday, and we are glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland. If you missed anything with the executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. That's always available for you there. You can get tuned up for the Chiefs right here tonight. Speaking of, the Chiefs Kingdom Show will be on, and you can catch that on the Odyssey app or right here on KFH. It starts at 6, and then, of course, we have K-State Wildcat basketball tonight that follows it at 7 o'clock. Shocker basketball over on KEYN. Pregame coverage there begins at 5:30. As we spent some time there in some past segments on the Shockers, the state of things. Boy, it just really like to see them get a win, get some wins. I think, again, and we can revisit it for just a second here. I think the path for them to get to where we ultimately thought they could be is, although seemingly not realistic now, more realistic than K-State getting to the point we thought they could be at the start of the year, which is to be in the top half of the Big 12, which right now, fellas, I got to tell you, like, I don't know who K-State's going to beat in the Big 12. Like, maybe they can shoot lights out from three in a game or two and get some wins here. But based on what we've seen lately, it feels like they've got no shot to win Big 12 games.
Well, shoot, I thought that, you know, they would be able to handle a team like Oklahoma State. I know that it was in Stillwater, but, you know, it's not like the Cowboys are a premier program right now. And they struggled big time, especially to end the first half last week in Stillwater. So that's a major concern if they can't, you know, hang with a team like Oklahoma State that's kind of in rebuilding mode right now with a new coach and all of that after they moved on from Mike Boynton. So if they can't do that, again, I know it was on the road. I have a hard time thinking that they're going to be able to, you know, have a whole lot of success in general. And the fact that they just got throttled by a Houston team at home. And it just, it shows the disparity between the teams at the very top of the conference and then where K-State is right now.
Well, but TJ, I think when we look at K-State, like the issue that like we still don't even know, like, what's a good version of K-State? Like, what is there? Like, for the Shockers, we've seen what they can be. They have quality wins sprinkled all over their schedule. Like, we know what they're capable of. I have no idea what K-State is capable of or what a potential ceiling for them is, because we're 15 games into a season and we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I had a conversation with somebody the other day about the whole Jerome Tang argument about whether his seat's hot, when his seat does get hot. And I said, for his seat to really get hot, to a conversation to start having, they have to be last place in the Big 12 or second to last place. And I think everything above that, you just kind of have to just swallow and deal with it, which sucks, but I think that's what's going to have to happen. And they said, there's no way that K-State should finish below UCF and Utah and these teams like that. And I said, if they played each other on a neutral court, you're not going to pick K-State in that game, because they haven't shown you any reason to believe that they can beat these Big 12 teams. And frankly, when they beat Cincinnati, it was a surprise. They were favored in that game, but I wouldn't say that any of us were non-surprised that they won that game. You look at the Big 12 up and down, and if you played K-State in a neutral court against any of them, I don't think that you'd pick K-State in any game, especially after they lost to Oklahoma State. I don't know who they're going to beat.
Well, Cincinnati's 0-4 again. I'll remind you to start the league. If you go by the metrics, K-State is the worst. Like, they're the worst net. Like, the metrics don't like them either. Their lone quality win is Cincinnati, and we'll see if that's a quality win or not. A home win against Cincinnati, I mean, it's a quality win. That's not going to change. It's a quality win, any win in the Big 12 is probably a quality win. But man, like that of your, what do they have? 7 wins now? Like, go look at the other 6. It gets, and it's, and they're getting boat raced by everybody else. Like, they're just not even barely losing. Like, they're getting smashed. It's wild, wild stuff to think about where they were. And so when we talk about, Tommy, the path to get back, you know, if it's top half of the Big 12, what do we got? 16 teams now? You got to be better than one of, right? UCF, TCU, BYU, Arizona State, Utah, Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, or Colorado as it currently stands. You have to be better than all of them to be in the top half. All of those teams. Like that to me just doesn't seem possible because, again, I don't even know what the best version of K-State is still. There may not be one.
I think that you can take the whole conversation about them finishing in the top half of the Big 12 just completely out of it. Like, it's not going to happen. It won't happen. I know that's, you know, where you would hope to see this program at this point, especially with the newcomers that they brought in, because, you know, I feel like what Hassan can do in shooting the three, Coleman Hawkins, you know, can, I know he's paid a lot of money, but he, you know, can continue to be productive, all of that. And then some of the other newcomers, pair him up with David Gasson and the younger guys on that roster. Yeah, the hope is that that's a team that can hit the court and be in the top half of the Big 12. They haven't shown any reason why they can do that. And I think that as you're comparing and contrasting where things are at for the Wildcats versus where things are at for the Shockers, TJ brought up a point while we were on break last hour about how with Wichita State, it's almost more maddening because they've shown they can do it. They just haven't lately. Like, they were good and now they're bad. With K-State, they've just been bad. Like, they've just been like flat out bad for basically the entire season.
So here, I'm just looking at the net rankings, and even with the disaster of the last couple of weeks, the Shockers, I believe, still sit 5th right now in the net among American teams. That's how, and I'm not, I'm only saying that to remind ourselves of what they've done this year.
How bad the American is? Is that what
we're
reminding ourselves of?
Not just that. We know that, but that's part of the reason why I think, like, if the Shockers can play like they played at the beginning of the season, they could still, even with as bad as it's been, if they just return to that, that could be a path to being the 4th best team in the American when the dust settles, which is where we wanted them to be, right? Top 3, top 4 anyway. I'm not saying I think that's going to happen. Nothing that we've seen in the last 2 weeks would make you think, oh yeah, that's going to happen. I'm just saying, like, the path to get there, like, it's not even in the same universe as K-State's path to expectations. So, look, I'm an optimist, so I want to, like, get excited about every game that we watch and cover. And that's all I can hang my hat on, is if whatever it is that has gone wrong with the perimeter defense, the turnovers, all of these things the last few weeks, at least we've seen them be better than that. We haven't seen K-State be any better than what they are currently at any point this year. So if they do something special, it will be getting to a place that we don't even know exists yet. If Wichita State can just get back to where we've seen them not that long ago, TJ, their path to where we thought that might be is still sitting there.
Yeah, 2 points on that. You know, looking at the rest of their conference schedule, I was talking to our friend Joe Baker about this, that he was wondering where Wichita State could finish this season. I said, when you look at conference play, they're going to play 18 games. They're 0-3. They've got 15 ahead of them. 5 of those games, they're going to play Memphis twice, Florida Atlantic, North Texas are all teams that are by every metric better than them when you look at the predictive rankings. So their ceiling the rest of the way is 10-5, which feels insane to think about right now.
Feels miles away.
But you're going to play Charlotte. You're going to play Tulsa. You're going to play the bottom dwellers of this AAC and have a chance here. The second point is their goals were, we talked that this could be the team that could make a run to make it back to March Madness. It's something that we haven't seen in a couple of years. It seems completely far-fetched now. But the fact of the matter is the American is a one-bid league. And
absolutely,
the way the SEC is playing, the way the Big 12 is playing, they're going to take every single spot. So you're not going to get an at-large bid if you're in the American. They have to go win that tournament in March. And the great part about college basketball is that they aren't eliminated yet. They got to go beat every team in that tournament still. They beat Memphis last year, who was worlds better than they were. And the rest of the American's not very good. It's still on the table. There's a lot that needs to be fixed. But basically, you have 2 months to figure it out. And these games frankly, they don't matter anymore. You're not going to win the American anymore.
Well, I mean, look, if Memphis does something special and continues their path and then loses the conference tournament, that would be the only – Memphis is good enough to be an at-large right now, but that's your only – I mean, that is the path. It's not a two-bid league without an upset Cinderella-type conference tournament run. I don't – look, I'm not trying to be – I don't care about Wichita State as it pertains to the NCAA tournament right now. I care about that they finish near the top of the AAC. Because if they can't do that, that is a major, major, major problem. And especially in this season where the league is probably, it's not probably, it's the worst it's been since Wichita State has been in it. This is the worst year for it. And they brought all off season. It's look what we're bringing back. We've got all this experience. Like, they have to be able to climb up the AAC standings.
Yeah, and let's go back to kind of what that ceiling is, TJ, that you sort of lined out there. I mean, let's say that 10-5 the rest of the way is the ceiling, knowing who they're playing. Well, then you finish conference at 10-8 overall. That's 5 wins better than last year in conference play for the Shockers.
I don't know the last time they went 500 in conference play.
Right.
That's the thing.
You know, now, should we expect that? I mean, I think we can hope for that. That might be the ceiling that you reach for. But knowing the way that they played against UTSA, the way they played against South Florida at home just in the last week, man, it makes it really difficult to even think that 10-5 ceiling with the bottom dwellers in the conference that you're playing, I have a hard time thinking that that's realistic.
Well, it's not realistic, but it's out there, right? And only when you think of it in terms of like the best version of the Shockers, even that we've seen this year, right? I'm looking back. So Isaac Brown, they were 11-2 in the league. His second year was the year they struggled the most. His last year, they were 6-9. His second year, they were 9-9.
Yeah,
they were 9-9.
Yeah.
In that year.
Yep.
And that was, and we are told that that's not good.
That's not good enough.
Right. And so, like, the expectation is not 10-8. I don't think 10-8 is going to be the record that has the Shockers in the top 3 or 4 of this league. So when you look at the schedule now, I don't think you can think of it that way. You have to think of it as they're going to, at some point, beat a team that you're thinking about. In like, they must not lose all 4 to Memphis, to North Texas, And then, you know, Florida Atlantic in that other game, like, they can't lose all 5 of those games if they're going to get. And so you look back at it now. And again, if you're trying to be optimistic here with it, remember that they beat teams this year in St. Louis, Minnesota, Northern Iowa, Western Kentucky that either are at right there with those teams or better. So they're capable of it. Now, doesn't feel like that based on the way we've seen them play lately, right? At all. But at other times in this season, they've been good enough to win games like that. So can they get back to that point? Can Ronnie DeGray ride in on his silver horse and save this defense?
I don't know.
Because that's about the only thing I can think of right now. He is maybe their best defender. I will say that. And he defends all 5 positions. He'll help when he gets back defensively. But can he come in and sort of change this, whatever culture it is that is in, you know,
the lack of effort, the lack of discipline, like all of that. I mean, like I mentioned it yesterday, Ronnie DeGray is not going to come in and magically keep the rest of the team from dribbling the ball off their foot.
Exactly.
Right. But can he be the linchpin to get them? Because we've seen them not do that at points this season. Again, it's not what we're talking about with K-State, where we haven't even seen them be good. Like we have though with Wichita State. We've seen a lot of games where they don't turn the ball over. That's only a recent problem. We've seen a lot of games where they didn't allow the opposition to shoot 50% from 3, which they seem to do now every conference game that they play for some reason. They're going to have to coach their way out of it and get the effort back on the table. That's it. Like, that's all they can do. That game is tonight. You've got K-State tonight. We're hyping ourselves up for it, if you can't tell. Like, we're trying to get the energy back to be excited about these basketball games. We'll be back with more Sports Daily right after this.